Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 131 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger, alongside Frank Saravalli, and what has become a very interesting second round of the NHL playoffs. Lots of surprises. We've got injuries that are impacting series. We got a potential sweep that I don't think many people saw coming. We've got Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl absolutely torching the Calgary Flames. So, Frank, do you want to start? Why don't we start in Florida and Tampa? How surprised are you? The Panthers are basically on life support after three games.
I would say surprised in that it's only been three games. I mean, remember Daryl Sutter saying waste of 8 days for whoever played the Avs? This could be a waste of seven. I mean, that's how quickly this is playing out for the Panthers, who are staring down elimination on back-to-back nights after losing game three. And I think it's more the style. Like we remember, Jay, we had questions like, hey, can the Panthers translate their game to the playoffs? Well, they've got three goals in three games this series, like not a recipe for success. And the power play struggled, but it's kind of found itself a little bit on Sunday. And I don't know. Are they just running into Vasilevsky being Vasilevsky? I think it's more than that. I just think the Panthers have really struggled.
Oh, well, their offense, you could put an APB out for the vast majority of their offensive players. And when that's part of your makeup all season long, they're the highest scoring team in the league. You can't just say, well, okay, now we're going to win 2-1 games. Well, you didn't win 2-1 games all season long. That wasn't your model. You won by outscoring the opposition consistently, and they haven't been able to do it. Obviously, they had, you know, a complete meltdown in the final 15 seconds of game two. And, I don't think you can come back from that. You tie that game, anything happens. And now they kind of got spanked in game three, ends up being, I know there's some empty net goals and everything, but still I look at them and, you know, maybe they can get a win here, but I can't see them winning four straight against Tampa Bay Lightning. I just, like, of all the teams, it's like Tampa hasn't lost two straight, Frank. In this is their third playoff year. How the hell are they going to beat them four in a row?
I've covered one of the three teams in NHL history that came back from a 3-0 deficit, and it was the Flyers in 2010. I don't see it. Every game in that series was close. The Flyers probably could have won any of those first three games, and they didn't. And that's not really the same for the Panthers. So, you know, whether they prolong it one game, two games, whatever it is, the Panthers are going to have a lot of questions to answer for themselves this offseason.
Yeah, the Panthers, they kind of remind me a little bit of 2019 Lightning, right? Like maybe they had to have a tough loss. Now, they've never won anything in the playoffs, right, at all. So I wonder if inexperience, because even when they beat Washington, Frank, like they just didn't look like the dominant team they were in the regular season.
Yeah, but did the Lightning in 2019 load up with pending UFAs?
Oh, fair point.
I don't really see the correlation. Like they had an unbelievable regular season, not one of the best regular seasons of all time, but certainly their offense and the way they produced was. the top offense in the salary cap era. I can't believe we saw a team that averaged more than four goals a game in the regular season. And yet you look at their offense this series, three games, three goals. It does not compute.
No, it is very strange. There's no question about it. It's been the biggest surprise to me of all the playoffs is how they're just their inability to produce offense. And it's cost them. I think they're done. Honestly, I think they're done. Not that that's a real bold statement. It's Captain Obvious statement when you're down 3-0. But sorry, Panthers fans. I think the Lightning are going to get to the conference final again. Now, who they face, so Frank.
Wait a second. Here's what's the scariest part, Jay, is the Lightning have done this without Braden Point.
Yeah.
Vasilevsky is like Conn Smythe Vasilevsky again. And they're going to have rest. A team that's played so many playoff games, if they can close it out soon, it's going to have some time while the Hurricanes can't get their stuff together on the road, which by definition means it's going to be a long series. It's the other end of it's going to be fascinating. I'd have to think that whoever the Lightning play, if, you know, provided they advance to the final, are going to be an overwhelming favorite in round three.
Well, and the funny thing is the Rangers could easily be up 2-1 in that series. They easily could have won. Capocacco had game one on a stick with 6 minutes to go and missed it. And you know what? It's right about Carolina. What do you make of you don't see head coaches really get after opposing players very often, but Gerard Gallant wasn't very happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I like Tony D is the villain we all need in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He's gone after everyone. Boston media, Bruins players, now Rangers. Like he's, you know, he hasn't been quite as good this series as he was in the first round, but you know, I love that he's in the mix on everything.
Well, he's competitive, right? Like Caroline at times to me has like, they're so consistent that I know that should never be a negative for a team, but I think they could use a little emotion every now and then. And so it gets that team fired up because, you know, even last game, like you look at that, you know, Shesterkin lets in a goal that he just usually would never let in. And that was the only reason that the game was even that close. I thought, like, I will say this though, Frank, of all the playoff games that I was watching it with my 8-year-old son, and we're sitting there, and after about a period, he's like, "Dad, there's nothing happening. Can we change channels?" Like, it was,
and he's true. That's why.
Yeah, it was very uneventful game three.
Well, you know what's funny though, and I'm not like I agree with you, but I think what kind of bothers me a little bit about the narrative with the Hurricanes is everyone spends so much time talking about all the things they don't have. You know, they don't have a superstar. They don't have, you know, a tough guy that can play that game. But they're a darn good team.
And, oh, yeah.
And I just think with their identity, they don't really stray from it all that often. It's odd the way that it's played out in the playoffs. The fact that they can't win on the road, they're going to have to figure that out. 6-0 at home, 0-4 away from PNC Arena. It's not the pulled pork that they're missing when they're away. I don't know what the answer is, but they desperately need to find a win at the Garden in game four, just so that they can get that off their back and stop answering questions or having us ask questions about why they can't win on the road.
Well, they do have home ice advantage, even if they win against Tampa. So I guess technically, Frank, as long as they keep winning at home, then you're right, though. It just makes life harder on them. But in theory, they could get to the cup final. But it's not the most ideal way to go about it.
You mentioned sure. Surprises, too, Jay. Is Antti Raanta one of the surprises of the playoffs?
You know what's funny? When you look at Antti Raanta's numbers, when he's able to stay healthy, he's a pretty good goalie, but usually it's health that derails him. So I guess to me, and this is going to sound, and I don't like saying this, but yeah, the surprise to me would be that Raanta stayed healthy. That would be the big surprise. Because if you look at his numbers dating back to Arizona, when the guy was healthy, man, he could put together really good stretches of games. And then all of a sudden he would get injured. Right. But I think a little bit his play, but probably just the fact that he's playing all the time. And that's a positive surprise to me.
Yeah. I mean, he's handled and managed the workload just fine. And Freddie Anderson, interesting to see him on the trip. I think he's sort of been driving the Hurricanes a little bit crazy. This injury and rehab has taken way longer than anyone would have imagined. I mean, just ask the Toronto Maple Leafs in years past. It, whenever he was injured, it would always take way longer than the team and doctors thought. And I think with the Canes, it's sort of been front and center. I think they've been trying to get him back. And now he's seems like he's maybe finally getting a little bit closer. That maybe gives the Hurricanes a bit of an insurance policy in case Ranta does indeed go down at some point.
Oh, well, yeah, that'd be huge if all of a sudden your starting goaltender can come back at some point in the playoffs. And, you know, if he plays well, well, that's a huge boost for the Hurricanes. And, you know, I'm intrigued by that series. I think obviously you mentioned the rest for Tampa. They have a chance to sweep and then get lots of rest. And, you know, the Rangers and Carolina, like to me, that one, I could easily see that series going seven easily. And that would probably benefit Tampa.
That would give Tampa almost a week off.
Yeah,
it would give them exactly a week off at least.
Yeah. So that could be a huge thing. And, you know, just more time for Braden Point to get back
at the beach. Let's move. Perfect time of year for the Bolts.
Yeah. Jeez. The St. Louis Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. It's been a highly entertaining series. And obviously it came with, I don't even know if it was that controversial, to be honest. I watched the replay numerous times. I don't think Kadri, you know, purposely ran into Binnington. You know, he initiated the contact with the defenseman. I don't think there's any question about that. Now he has received supposedly from the NHL some death threats. Obviously Blues fans, calm down. Hey, I understand it's hockey, but I don't think there's any need to go that far. But what did you make of the play? And is Binnington, who'd been playing great, is his loss now too much for the Blues to overcome?
Well, to answer the second one first, I don't think it's too much to overcome just because Ville Husso was the better goalie in the regular season. He struggled in the first couple games against Minnesota. It's been all Binnington since. I think the one thing that caught my eye watching that game when he entered against the Avs was that he seemed like he was a little wide-eyed, seemed a little bit nervous and jittery. So he's going to have to try and overcome that and get back to the regular season form that he showed. There's a lot riding on the line for Ville Husso. His stock has dropped a little bit these playoffs. Pending unrestricted free agent, there's a number of teams out there that have had Ville Husso circled on their list in terms of trying to get him this summer. So they're in fine hands with Binnington out. And by the way, not for nothing, Charlie Lindgren is their emergency guy that came up, the third guy on emergency recall. He'll be backing up Ville Husso for the time being as the Blues ruled Binnington out for the series. And Mike McKenna, just for a side note, in case he ever gets there, he said Charlie Lindgren was the best third goalie in the entire NHL this season. So they're in decent shape. And it's nice to have that organizational depth, you know, to be able to go to a guy like Husso, who is your game one starter now at this point in the series. What do I make of the play? If it was JT Compher that ran into Jordan Binnington and not Nazem Kadri, we'd probably never talk about it again. It's player circumstance. You know, everyone says, well, he didn't have any real intent to run into Jordan Binnington, but he knew exactly what he was doing. And I'm like, huh? How does that work exactly? Like, if you were trying to run him over, then you just would. It's kind of like the same way I see the Milan Lucic, you know, collision with Mike Smith. If Milan Lucic was going to run over Mike Smith, he would have absolutely plastered him through the end boards. He didn't.
Yeah. No,
so
I agree.
The reason Lucic gets tossed and gets the 5-minute major and game misconduct is because player and place. The score was out of hand. There's less than 10 minutes left in a game that's sort of, you know, gone by the wayside already. Take him out of it and game management for the officials. You know what I mean? You know, that's one less player causing trouble that they need to worry about if he just go parks himself in the dressing room for the last 10, 11 minutes. With Kadri, it's way overboard. You know, I hate to see the death threats. I hate to see the racist comments. Everything that's followed since, it's, you know, we've made a lot of strides in our game in terms of trying to make the game a better place. And to have that stuff pop up, just unacceptable, flat out. And I think no suspension was the right call. And can we talk for a second about Jordan Binnington, the biggest fake tough guy in the NHL? Like, here's a guy who is constantly trying to get in the mix, waving his stick, you know, just above and beyond rambunctious on the ice, trying to get in people's kitchen. And yet he never actually fights. He never actually does anything. And so to throw the water bottle at Kadri from a distance while he's leaving the arena or leaving the series while Kadri's doing his post-game interview on TNT, like, come on. If you want to actually do something, then go do it. Don't throw a water bottle. It's like, who throws a shoe? Who does that?
Yeah, you know what? I would agree with you, Frank. The pretender thing with Binnington, I've seen him get upset a lot, but a few guys, I think it was Devin Dubnyk one game against the San Jose Sharks last year when Dubnyk kind of came over, and Dubnyk's a big dude. And basically, you just saw him say something, and then, you know, Binnington doesn't do anything. So, like, Ray Emery was tough goalie.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, Ray Emery fought tough, like, legit tough guys, for goodness sake.
There are a few people, Jay, that I've actually been, like, nervous around, and Ray Emery is one of them. Because I had a few run-ins with him, you know, where he was critical of something I wrote or said, and he was a scary dude.
Yeah. Well, but you know what? He backed it up though, right? Like
that's why I was nervous. Cause
yeah,
he actually was a legit real tough guy.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So, you know, it is a huge blow for the Blues for sure. But, you're right. I think there is at some point, if you want to be the toughest goalie in the league, great. Well, then at some point you got to back it up.
Less talk, more action is where I'm at.
Yeah. But now I didn't see the interview. I saw the clip of it. I didn't see it live, but like, how close was the water bottle?
I don't think it was that close. And I don't even think it was full, but the point is like, why even do it at all?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're not going to do anything else. So,
I mean, I've been in that arena a bunch, you know, spent a lot of time there. That hallway it's not very long. The space between the Avs room and the Blues room, you know, it's not much more than, you know, 75, 80 feet. Like you could have, if you want to do something, get in his face, say something, throw a water bottle, and to do it while he's on TV. I don't know. I don't get it. And I would have fined him.
Yeah.
Had they proven it actually was him. I think that was the issue for the NHL is it was an alleged incident and there was,
was there a second chucker? That's what I'd like to know, Frank. Was there a second chucker for all of our Seinfeld fans? If you don't get that reference, it's a classic. Now, the battle.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Alberta, where both of us are right now, the Edmonton Oilers, after a crazy game one that saw the most goals ever scored combined in a Battle of Alberta game, 15. The previous record was 12. The most goals against Edmonton had ever allowed in a playoff game against Calgary. Previous was 6. Then it was up to 9. But since really the first 10 minutes of game two, the Edmonton Oilers have thoroughly dominated. the Calgary Flames for the last, five and a half periods. They game three, Frank, was Edmonton. They haven't had a good start. They had a good start. They outshot them, 20-7, I think, in the first period. And they just kept going. And then obviously in the second period, their top line took the game over. Draisaitl sets an NHL record for most assists in one period with four, ties the NHL record for most points in a period with four. Kane gets a natural hat trick. I think it was seventh fastest all time. McDavid, who came into the game averaging 2.21 points per game, increases his points per game with a 3-point evening and just some more ridiculous moves. Like he's taken his game to such a new level. It's mind blowing to me. But what do you make of Matthew Tkachuk's post game comments when I think McDavid's clearly in their head when he says, well, they have one guy playing half the game. The funny thing is, Frank, the last two games, Connor McDavid's only played 20 minutes
Zach
a game.
Hyman, why is he talking about Zach Hyman like that?
Yeah, well, exactly. Hyman, like Draisaitl, who's slowly getting healthier, you can tell. He even joked in a press conference saying, hey, I'm finer, because it earlier said he was fine. Like that comment, there's no doubt that McDavid's dominating when he's on the ice. But, you know, you look at Mike Smith's play the last two games outside of the first 10 minutes of game two. Like the Oilers they've taken one of Calgary's biggest strengths away in this series, Frank, in the last two games. Their defensemen engaging up in the rush and starting the rush is non-existent. And that was one of their fortes all season.
It's not just that. It's also the fact that they basically had to sit back and especially in game three, their forecheck was really soft. Because they had to sit back out of deference to McDavid and Draisaitl and Kane and what they've been able to do. That line has been insane. It's really changed the series. You and I talked about a post game after game three, just, you know, to think that the Oilers are in this spot, having this stacked three-headed monster super line together with Draisaitl, McDavid and Kane, all because Mikey Anderson contorted Leon Draisaitl in the Kings series. If Draisaitl's not injured, there's probably a 5% chance that Jay Woodcroft would have put Draisaitl and McDavid together on the same line. And then to bump Kane up there to start game two. It's changed everything in this series. Those three players, you know, they've combined for 55 points in 10 games. You've got the two leading point getters. And then Kane, who leads the playoffs in goals, and the Flames have had to change their game. You know, Jay Woodcroft, we've talked about the Oilers' poor starts and how, you know, 7 out of 9 playoff games to start, they had been no good in the first few minutes, first period. They were able to set the tone, dictate the style and pace of play, and that's a fine.
Yeah, sorry, buddy. Jeez, my mother, what the hell is she doing?
How dare her call her son?
God, I shut my ringer off. So, but you know what? It is fascinating to me to see, like, Connor McDavid is doing something that we haven't seen really since Lemieux and Gretzky, right?
But I'm saying is it's more than just one player.
Like, oh, I agree. Draisaitl,
19 points in 10 games. He's always going to be Malkin to Crosby, but he's been almost, and to do it on one leg, it might be as impressive as what we're seeing from McDavid.
Oh, I agree with you. Like that's why I think the mental battle of the playoffs, it becomes such a mental thing at times. And if Calgary's worried so much about one player, that to me, they're in their head. Now, I get you got to respect Connor McDavid, no question. And you have to be leery of him. And he's a highlight reel right now. We've watched Connor McDavid. I've watched him every game for 7 years. I've never seen him play at this level. Like, I know people are like, oh, I should have won the Hart. This Connor McDavid wasn't this guy in the regular season. He was still very good. But first of all, it's a regular season award. It has nothing to do with the playoffs. But he has taken his game to such a high level, Frank. And it's every shift. Like every time he gets the puck right now, you can just see, like, there was one shift in the third period. McDavid had the puck and the Calgary players, it's almost like they're in fear now. And I understand it because his lateral mobility in the series and how he goes to the right, quickly cuts back. Guys are in the right position and he's still just flat out beating them. It's amazing.
He also seems like he's using more of the ice, doesn't he? Especially in the offensive zone. It feels like he's, you know, not afraid to go and play a little bit higher at even strength to, you know, utilize whatever space he can find.
Well, he loves winding that up, right? Like, now Patrick Kane, I thought, was always the best at that. Kane would circle high in the offensive zone in Chicago, and then guys would just be fearful because it sucks some guys up higher. And McDavid's so fast, guys can't stick with him. If he starts walking, you know, 6 feet in front of the blue line from going across whichever side of the boards he's going to the other side, there's no one that can stick with him. And all of a sudden now other guys are like, well, geez, I got to step up. And it creates so many issues. And it was interesting watching the first period that Edmonton controlled. They didn't score, but they had all their lines going. And even though they're relying a lot on seven forwards right now, even if they've dressed 12, you know, you look at their 8 through 12 forwards, or, you know, they're playing anywhere from, you know, 9 or 10 minutes anyway, down to six. Like, they're really Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, McDavid, Draisaitl, Kane, Yamamoto, you know, those are the guys they're relying on. And, I do wonder if now for Edmonton, if they win the series short, well, then it doesn't matter. You can get some rest. But I do wonder if eventually you need to have a few more guys, at least in double digits.
Cup check time for the Flames in game four. It really is. Yeah. Like, I think that's what it, McDavid getting to the level he's been at, is there are no words. But I think I'm more surprised about how the Flames have sort of abandoned their approach that's been so successful all year. What we saw in game three was not a typical Daryl Sutter team. And part of that's because of how good the Oilers have been and how they've forced them to do that. But in the, you know, the playoffs is a battle of wills. How do the Flames get back to that? And can they do it in game four? It's going to be incredibly hostile in Rogers Place. It's going to be, you know, the Oilers have a real chance here, and a chance to show. Mike Smith talked about this after game three, a chance to show some real maturity, a chance to show that they've learned a lesson being up 2-1 against the Kings. They have an opportunity here to make life pretty easy for themselves, and they win. They go up 3-1 and they're going to be in a great spot.
Yeah. Smith went out of his way to mention that. I don't even ask him about how in game four, maybe their worst game of the playoffs against the LA Kings, that they just didn't take advantage of that. And shortening series and giving your team more rest can be huge in the long run. So I would expect Edmonton to have a much better game. Same with Calgary. But even when Calgary's playing well, Jacob Markstrom played really well, Frank. And then after 40 minutes, he still allowed 4 goals. And I'm not sure, like, none of them were bad goals. Like, the last 9 goals Edmonton scored, I don't think any of them I look and say, geez, Markstrom should have had that one.
Yes, so Sutter pulls him at the end of the second, and I understand the timing of it. He said he didn't want to put Dan Vladar in that late, you know, without having the opportunity to stretch. So he wanted to give him the intermission. But is pulling Markstrom an admission from the Flames, even though I'm with you? Like, if Markstrom didn't play as well as he did in the first period, it's 7-0 or 8-0. Yep. But the way that the Oilers have been able to get to Markstrom since he joined the Flames, that's, I think, 14 games now, and I think his save percentage is .870 against the Oilers. At what point does that become a thing, or is it a thing already? And also, does Jacob Markstrom regret not signing with the Oilers? And do the Oilers, do they not regret not signing him?
Well, when you consider, you know, last year with Mike Smith, Edmonton made the playoffs. Calgary didn't. And this year, Mike Smith now is ahead of Jacob Markstrom, and he makes 1/3 the price. So I think most people would say, hey, straight up, they think Markstrom's a better goalie. Look at his regular season numbers. And that's totally valid. You know, Mike Smith, as Jay Woodcroft pointed out numerous times yesterday, Frank, he's only played 28 games, and now it's 10, it's 38. And he kept reinforcing the 63. Like, Jay Woodcroft likes to subtly put in a little mental warfare where he's just talking, well, 63 and wear and tear and wear and tear. And so
that was also to combat the narrative that was out there, you know, earlier in the series saying that Mike Smith was tired.
Yeah, I didn't ever buy into that. Like, the guy hasn't played, like, he can play every second game. Like, it's not a big deal.
Well, it was also like
every second day.
At some point, one of the local media members here tweeted it out 6 minutes into game two. Like, no one's tired 6 minutes into a game. I'm sorry. Even 41
minutes. No chance. I was, especially they had days off between game seven and game one, right? Like, they had 3 days off. So I don't, fatigue to me, you can have a bad night. And it has nothing to do with fatigue. It's going to happen.
That's always the concern with Smith, isn't it? That he is just going to have a Mike Smith night that blows up like game one did.
Yeah, but he also has so many good nights. But it's funny, you talked earlier about Carolina. I think people focus on Mike Smith's one bad puck handling hint skill here, or you know, maybe there's a night where he looks like he's flopping all around and not making saves. But then for the next eight games, he plays great. But everybody just waits for it. Not everybody. Some people just wait for the one mistake. So
he's a battler.
It is. Because if you look at his numbers have been excellent over the last 2 years at Edmonton. And at $2 million, Frank, it's one of the best bargains for the amount of value you get in how he plays to what you pay him. It's actually been a really good bargain.
He has. And Jay, the other part of it, too, is he's changed the narrative in the series. The way he was able to play in game two, the way he played in game three, like it's unfortunate the way that it went with the concussion spotter yanking him from the game. My guess is he has a real good shot at getting a shutout in game three, if he stays in the game for the full time, but he doesn't. And now people are asking questions about Jacob Markstrom, not about Mike Smith today.
Yeah, it's Tuesday night in Edmonton. It's going to be a crazy crowd, man. People in Edmonton, they were celebrating a lot, as they should. It's a long weekend Sunday in Alberta yesterday, so I'm sure there's a few hangovers in Edmonton today. And hey, one guy who, I don't know, maybe he is or maybe he isn't, Tyler Yaremchuk will join us now as on the Monday edition of the pod. Ty, how you doing?
Fantastic, Jay. Frank and I are in studio together, so you can't see me, but you can see my hand here. Hello. But ready for another edition of Buy or Sell. I don't have my ding dong button loaded up here, but Buy or Sell is still brought to you by our friends at DoorDash. Promo code RUNDOWNDD gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order. Ding dong.
Ding dong. We saw Liam in person as well. It was great to hang out with him.
But then that's all you said to him. Yeah. You're like, where's Liam? Ding dong.
Legend.
He is. All right, let's jump into it. I'm doing an off-season edition of Buy or Sell, giving some love to those fan bases who don't have any hockey to watch anymore or don't get to watch their favorite team, I should say. Looking ahead to free agency, I know it feels like it's probably a year away right now, but still, a couple of teams that I got my eye on. I'm going to say the Ottawa Senators find a way to make a big splash in free agency this summer. Frank, you buying or selling that?
I'm buying. I think this is where the rubber meets the road for the Sens in their rebuild. I think they're looking at potentially trading that number 7 overall pick in the draft. That has popped up in conversation in recent days. And they just need veteran players that can help get that team trending in the right direction. They've got young players and really good ones at every position. Their defense is going to be a little bit stronger as some of those guys continue to take a step. They finally got a little bit better goaltending with Anton Forsberg settling things down in a big way. And I don't know. I just think the Sens, it's a long leap. And we saw how big the gap is between teams, non-playoff teams and playoff teams in the East. But I think they're going to be pretty aggressive in trying to spend a little bit to find the right veterans that can complement the young players they have.
I would agree that that's what they need. I hope they don't go big game hunting in free agency, because usually that that ends up not working out well for your team. I think if Ottawa is going to be involved in free agency, they need to be quiet on day one and then strike on day two and three when the prices aren't overinflated and you can get more bargain deals.
Fair enough. Another team going to the complete opposite side of the continent, more or less, the Seattle Kraken. I think that's a team who could maybe be itching to make a big splash after their inaugural season and go too well. Jason, you buying or selling on the Kraken being big players in free agency this summer?
Well, I think that was part of their plan. When you look back at their draft, I think their draft wasn't, and they'll never come out in a minute, but I don't think their draft was ever built that they were going to be highly successful in year one. I think this was more of the long-term play. But if you weren't going to go out and get Vladdy Tarasenko for nothing last summer, why are you suddenly going to go out the year later and get free agents? I think Seattle's going to be more involved in trades where they're going to take on some, as teams are going to try to dump some salaries and they're going to get a few more prospects with it and they'll take some guys. That's where I think I see Seattle more involved to use their cap space to take trades with guys who have 1 or 2 years left and to get more draft capital.
Yeah, I'm going to sell as well. I think free agency would be just about the last thing this team needs. It's going to be all about the draft. For that team, you got to hit on your picks. Looks like they've got a few good ones already. Matty Beniers is, I think, going to be a star. To get his feet wet in the NHL has been really important. But free agency, why? I mean, you're 3, 4, 5, 6 years away from really having a competitive team on the ice. and they don't need to spend money to do it. They can utilize, as you said, and wield their cap space in a way that they can acquire assets and picks to get better that way.
Well, Frank, speaking of drafting, right in their own backyard, the Seattle Thunderbirds have so many good young prospects. Like Seattle's, I looked at teams like, you got to be able to draft well in your backyard. For many years, the Edmonton Oilers, there was guys that were right in Alberta. Colton Pareko is a really good example, and others where they didn't draft well right close to home. I know you have to scout everywhere in the world, but my goodness, if you shouldn't get beat in your own backyard. I'm very curious to see what Seattle's scouting is going to be and how this draft's going to approach when they have a team right there that's got a lot of good guys, and not just them, but the Western League specifically. So I'm going to be very curious how their drafting goes.
Yeah, I would say their amateur scouting has been good. Their pro scouting has left a lot to be desired.
All right. Third one I got for you. News earlier this week that Brian Rust got a new deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins, which was certainly surprising. Just based off that, I'm going to say one of Chris Letanger of Evgeny Malkin will be in a different jersey next season. Frank, you buying or selling? The tough part is the Rust deal is actually pretty team friendly, honestly.
Yeah, it ended up being a pretty decent value. I can tell you that there were a few teams that were really disappointed that he didn't make it to market. And I heard some teams talking, hey, we'd be willing to give this guy 6.5. They thought, you know, a point per game producer thereabouts this season, ranked 45th in points per game. Had a couple injury concerns, but I don't think, you know, anything that correlates to any sort of long-term issue. And I'm going to say Evgeny Malkin is the odd guy out.
Ooh.
I think the Pens have sort of circled Chris Letang as their guy that they really can't replace elsewhere. And I just think when you take Letang and whatever he's going to make probably starts with a 7, and you take Rust with his 5 and change, that's 12 something. How much is left for Evgeny Malkin? You've got some other guys to sign. You got to take care of, you know, Evan Rodriguez, for instance. Do they go after any other free agents? I think Letang is the guy. I think he's the next guy for sure.
All right.
It's a good question. I'm actually, I'm going to sell. I think they both come back, and here's why. Rust got a $1.6 million raise. You mentioned Chris Letang. If it starts with a 7, that's basically what he's making now. I don't think if Jenny Malkin, he's talked openly about, like, you know, he's making 9.5. So I think his next salary, even if it's 2 or 3 years, is going to be a pay cut. I think they're going to let Kasperi Kapanen walk. They're not going to qualify him. So there's 3.2. Brian Rust takes half of it. If Malkin takes less, they actually have more cap space. You know, Rodriguez is the one name, Frank, and that's a good one on, you know, what kind of raise, how much will he get? You know, this is obviously his breakout season, but Pittsburgh has a history of being able to get guys to not have to, they don't overpay guys. So I think they're going to keep both of them. And I think ultimately if Malkin wants to stay there, Crosby said 3 more years. I could see Malkin signing a 2 or 3 year deal.
All right, we're going to wrap it up with a bonus question courtesy of our friends at Points Bet Canada, live now in Ontario. Last night at the Battle of Alberta game, I was just walking around the concourse, like a lot of little kids there, and I was like, oh, that is so cool if this is like your first playoff game as a young hockey fan. My first playoff memories were of the 06 Cup run for the Oilers. I remember my dad taking me to game 6 of the Stanley Cup final. I remember when they beat Detroit. That was like the first like hockey fan moment for me. So my question for you guys, dig back in the memory bank. As a kid, what was your first playoff hockey memory, Frank?
It was in the 95, 96, 97 range for the Flyers. That was when I really got into it. The Flyers had some really good teams then, led by Eric Lindros. You know, he won the Hart in 95. And, man, they had some heartbreak, too. Like, that team was the heavy favorite against the Detroit Red Wings in 97. And they got swept. A choking situation as their... their head coach, Terry Murray, called it. And that was really, you know, I can remember like wearing a Flyers jersey to school and, you know, all that stuff. The town was just on fire with the team getting to the final again. And that's sort of right in that wheelhouse.
Jay?
As a kid, I never went to any playoff games live. We did have a few regular season games I got to go to, but don't ever recall a playoff game. So mine were more watching at home. And really, I have to say, as a young kid, I was a big Hartford fan. Growing up in Edmonton, obviously I was an Edmonton fan, but 1986 was like a crushing year for me. That's when Claude Lemieux, God, I hate him, when he scored in overtime against the Whalers. And that was also the same year Steve Smith had the own goal. So I learned a lot of heartbreak as a young kid that things don't necessarily go your way in game seven. But that's really kind of what I remember. And then the next year was the Islanders and Washington Capitals. I still remember my parents let me stay up late to watch, and it was four overtime periods. I didn't cheer for either team, but I just thought it was so cool as a kid that I got to watch the entire game. And that was really where I was like, wow, playoffs are awesome.
Well, you want to hear, now that you guys were talking about it, this jogged my memory and I forgot. And if my dad's listening, I'm still mad at this. I got punished at some point. We had tickets to the cup final and I got punished. I was supposed to go to the game. And I don't know if I talked back or said something or did something that was wrong. And my mom was like, that's it. You're not going. And not only that, but she wouldn't even let me watch game one in Philly of the Stanley Cup final against the Wings. And I was just absolutely beside myself.
You're getting choked up right now talking about it.
Yeah. I cried for like 2 days.
Oh, geez, that's harsh, man.
That is rough.
Philly parenting. It's tough stuff.
Got the old wooden spoon or belt every now and again, too.
All right. That's going to do it for another edition of Buy or Sell, delivered by our friends at DoorDash Ding Dong.
Hey, Frank, quickly before we go, there's a few coaching vacancies in the National Hockey League. Is the Dallas Stars the most intriguing or the best available coaching job in your eyes? Or is it still Vegas?
I would go Vegas, Winnipeg, Dallas.
Philly. Winnipeg over Dallas.
I just think that team massively underperformed. I think how many times am I going to flog myself for it? But picking that team to win the cup, there's something there. I don't know what happens with their core. I don't know who's back and who isn't. But whoever gets that job has enough pieces, Kyle Connor, Connor Hellebuck, to have a massive turnaround in short order.
Yeah, wow, that's fair. I just look at Jake Oettinger and Miro Heiskanen, and now John Klingberg might be leaving, so that's obviously a blow on the back end. Yeah. Well, they're older, but they got a line team. They need some more youth guys, but I think they've got potential there. And I like that team. And when you got a goaltender like Jake Oettinger, the way he played and his coming out party, that's a game changer for sure. So, I almost like Dallas. Like you speak of old, like Vegas, like the thing about Vegas is, man, if you go in there, that might be the least job security of all the jobs.
I guess you're still going to get a decent contract.
Oh yeah. Barry Trotz going to Vegas.
I don't think so. I don't know. Yeah. I don't see it, but it's still, Winnipeg still makes sense to me. I'm curious who else steps up. By the way, what do the Bruins do with Bruce Cassidy? That was one of the oddest press conferences ever with Cam Neely. Certainly little to no support. Are the Bruins, they've got to be an attractive opening, do they not?
Well, yeah, if they make that move, right? And I think if they do, Frank, it would likely come just like Vegas. Usually they like NHL in the playoffs. They like to do it on, when this in-between series starting and ending. So who knows? Maybe after round two, there'll be an announcement.
What an odd scenario for the Flyers to be in that of all the openings, they might be the least attractive.
Yeah, I still see, I don't know. I think Philly's got a lot of pieces. I'd like to know what happened there. Like they should have been better. So that'll be our offseason. Cause to me, of all the teams, like the Islanders and the Flyers, I think were 1 and 2 as far as the most disappointing regular season teams.
Detroit, I would be interested in Detroit.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Those you got guys, more Cider, the young man. Guys, they've got Cider, Raymond, more coming. Delkovich had a pretty decent year. I think he's got another step as they, begin to work their goalie prospects through. And I don't know. The Red Wings, I think if you can harness some of that talent, they've got a chance. You got a chance to be in that job for a really long time.
Frankie, we will see you later at the rink. Enjoy the daily face-off offices here in Edmonton as you tour around. Have some fun, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.